Sioux Bend County Public Safety and Correction Committee meeting of September 7th. I'll call to order and ask Mr. Nichols to lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Approval of the minutes of August 2nd and August 23rd. I have a second. Any additions or corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We're going to change the agenda around because the district attorney has a couple proposals that might take a little length in time. So, Sean, you're up first.
Nice. Yeah. Now, man. All right. I'll be quick. I've got two items on the agenda this morning. The first is to renew the AmeriCorps contract that we have as part of our Harrell Herring Quality Improvement Program. And we have two individuals currently. One is an intake coordinator, the other is an outreach coordinator, and both are functioning very well. So it's that time of year to renew. I've attached the agreement and the sample agreements for the members. And this is done annually. This will be year number three. So if you have any questions, I can answer those for you.
What?
Any questions for Sean? All in favor, say aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
And the second item on the agenda is what's known as the Upstate Family Court Grant. The state and ILS are moving towards similar standards like they did with Harrell Herring with the family court program. As we stand right now, the public defender's family court division has historically only had three attorneys and one support staff person. ILS has implemented proposed caseload standards like they did for the criminal side. They're not mandatory yet. They probably won't be for some time, but I think this is an effort to say, hey, everybody, this is coming. Let's try to get ahead of it and get some things going. So this family court grant is $500,000 over a three-year contract term,
$166,000.
To have a maximum of 33.3 Article 10 type proceedings per attorney per year. As we stand right now, the average for our three family court attorneys is 24 of those per attorney per year. So that's almost the maximum. And they're doing a lot of other, they're doing all of the other family court proceedings. So custody and visitation, family offense proceedings, paternity support cases. So they're nowhere near where these caseload caps would be. Based on that, I have prepared a proposal that I'd like your approval for, which would in essence create another full-time family court attorney position. That attorney would be handling Article 10 cases, at least with an eye towards that, to get the average number down. And also one support staff person full-time as a paralegal. And what these two things do is not only reduce the caseloads across the board, but they also give the attorneys time to address the quality improvement components of this particular grant and what I think is going to be another Harrell Herring looking type situation as we move forward into the future. So they're going to want to see that our attorneys are, you know, they have the time to make the right motions, to keep in contact with the clients and those sorts of things. So on that basis, I'd like your approval to send in my proposal for that. It's a competitive grant, so we'll see how we do.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second for discussion. A question I have is that, so you're only going to hire these two people if we get the $500,000 grant?
Correct.
So I guess the second question is, after the grant is over, are we going to retain these people?
We have found historically, these grants tend not to terminate in that way. They tend to bookend each other. And so we have quite a number of grants that, for example, on the criminal side, we have Distribution 7, which pays for salaries for certain positions. And when that ends, and based on the other grants that have fallen in between, then we have a bookend to that, which is Distribution 11. And that process has continued throughout. So like we've done in the past, the expectation is these things will continue.
Kelly?
My question is, how much do you expect this to cost per year? And is the grant over more than the term of a year?
So the grant is for 3 years. Okay. It's a 3-year contract, and they will dole out $166,000 and some change per year across the 3 years. And based on the salaries and fringe and things that I have put together, in year one, the personal service subtotal is $160,000 with $66,666 left over to do trainings and CLEs and other things for the new attorney to get them situated. Year two, with a COLA increase, is $162,500. Year three is $165,620. And what I've done is I've reduced the amount for trainings and CLEs and things each year to make sure that we don't spend a dime over $500,000 on these two positions over the 3 years. Sure.
Scott?
What's your confidence level you're going to be able to hire people?
Low, but I got to take a shot at it. And I think we do as an organization, because all signs point to ILS and the state making these caseload caps and other quality improvement measures mandatory, just as they did in Harrell. And so the idea here is, if I can get this rolling early, we can get some traction here and
join the meeting
when they do that.
Sean, this is Hilda. Do you
yes,
have
ma'am.
Space to put people?
Yes, we do.
Any other questions for Sean? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
John, I'd like to see the budget when it comes to finance.
So that will happen when the grant is being accepted. So
yeah,
normally we see that anyways.
Until we get the grant, we wouldn't, you know, right. budget for it. You will see, as you have in recent years, all the changes based on Harrell Herring. And so you'll see a couple changes, because again, this is a 5-year or more ramp up of additional funds and then additional expenses. But certainly we would show you a budget breakdown at which point in time, if we get awarded, for your resolution and everything, had come to you.
Thank
and
you.
I can certainly send around my entire budget proposal. Okay. I've prepared it. It's ready to go. I'd like to put that in the mail. And as an attachment, they have a breakout form where you put in all the numbers. I would have liked to have typed that, but they don't let you do that. But I can send that out too, so you can see exactly how the salary and fringe ramps up a little bit and the OTPS, so to speak, goes down. So
okay.
If that helps.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Just that attachment would be great.
Yes, sir.
Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have State Homeland Security Grant Program, FY21 grant. The amounts that are listed on the agenda are incorrect. And this is actually a grant that combines both emergency management and the sheriff's office for the state law enforcement terrorism prevention program. The total amount of the grant is $110,965. Emergency management piece is $83,224, and the sheriff's piece is $27,741. The undersheriff and I work pretty closely together when we're putting together these grant proposals. The changes in this that have happened the last couple of years has been the state and federal government are requiring us now to spend a certain amount of money in certain categories. So now we have to spend money in information technology support, cybersecurity, critical infrastructure, and specialized team support for emerging threats. So these are the areas that they designate that you have to spend the money specifically in. And then the additional funding is used for other programs that we've continued to support over the years, such as Armed Responding and the mobile app and those type of programs.
So we're just dealing with the Homeland Security grant at this point. That's 110.
110,965.
Okay. Have a motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay, the second grant is actually our local emergency management program grant. This is our annual revenue line item that is budgeted each year for our Homeland Security grant for local emergency management programs, $41,441.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Robert?
I got a question for Tim. How, now that you're done with that,
sure.
How close are we getting to the $30 million for FEMA designation for the damage in the county?
We're still working with the state and on that. As far as I think, you know, we're pretty darn close ourselves within the county. We've got about what I document is $12.1 million worth of road damage between the towns and the county infrastructure. And then you add on top of that, the Jasper Troopsburg School, you know, we're going to be pushing probably close to $20 million just ourselves, I would think, or more. So you add that on top of what the other counties across the state received. Allegheny had some damages. Yates had some damages. Oneida's got quite a bit of damage, I guess, understandable up there, including an additional school. So
have you figured in the home damage, or doesn't that count towards
that? That counts on a different side. SBA, which is the Small Business Administration, and FEMA were in and looked at the individual housing costs over Wednesday and Thursday last week. According to what I understand from SBA, we've met the requirements for the Small Business Administration loan program. So we'll probably get an SBA disaster out of that one. We're still waiting to hear back from FEMA. I pushed a lot of information up to the state on that, but they were then being drawn toward New York City and the you know, the tri-state area for the last storm for Ida. So I have not heard back from them on that.
So the $30 million is a combination of the counties around us that got hit by the same storm.
So each county in the state has a designated amount per capita that we have to meet, be able to qualify for FEMA reimbursement. Our amount in Steuben County is $380,000+. Each county in the state has a different amount based on per capita. So the total amount for all of New York is $30 million, or just over $30 million. So in order for FEMA to even take a look at New York State for a disaster declaration, we have to meet at least that amount of money to be able to qualify. So that's what we've been trying to develop. And that's for public assistance only, for road infrastructure, bridges, you know, schools. This would include the Woodhull Town Highway Shop, their water wastewater treatment plant, you know, all of those things that got damaged, that's public infrastructure. So that's the amount that we were looking for. On the individual assistance side, it's a lot different. It's formula based. It depends upon the number of properties that were uninsured or underinsured. It looks at the poverty levels, the amount of structures that are within the region. You know, there's a lot of different things that the FEMA looks at with the individual assistance to the homeowners.
Thank you.
Tim, on the school damage, FEMA, the amount we count toward FEMA, is that just the amount above and beyond what the insurance would pay?
So basically it's to put the building back to pre-existing conditions. So that's what we look at originally, is what's it going to cost to put the building back to the way it was before the flood. All right. And yes, they do factor in the insurance and anything like that, which the insurance that they had for the school was very minimal compared to what the damages are. So that's the first thing they look at. If we get the FEMA declaration, then FEMA comes in and they look at mitigation items, very similar to what we do in the roads. Like it, in, you know, if we have a bridge that spans 60 feet and we say FEMA, it'd be better for us to put a bridge in that's 100 foot, which hopefully isn't going to cause this problem again, they may agree to that. And then we get additional amount of money to fix the bridge the way it should be fixed. And the same thing goes with the school. So if they choose to do other projects above and beyond what it is to return the building as it was pre-existing condition, then they work with FEMA on that to mitigate actions and change those projects.
We just need them to, we just need the state to, you know, finally agree that we've hit 30 million statewide, so the governor can request the major disaster declaration. And like Tim said, FEMA has the IA boots on the ground, but we need the you know, public damage boots on the ground too. So mm-hmm. Once that's cleared, then they'll work through, okay, how much are you getting insurance? What are you going to do? I mean, it's going to be a multi-year, frankly, process to recoup everything. But
the preliminary numbers at the school are well over the 30 million.
Well, they were at first, but Tim and I have been working with LaBella and the school because the numbers, kind of back of the napkin numbers that were initially given.
Okay.
The state had a lot of questions, justifiably so. And once they got the answers and LaBella really whittled it down, it's still, again, coupled with our roads, it's going to put us well over.
Okay.
But it's not the initial huge, it's still, you know, between mitigation and getting it back to where it was, you're still talking $20 million.
Okay. Thanks.
Errol.
Tim, do you know the percentage for the SBA loans?
So I think I think just talking briefly with the gentleman that was here from SBA, the individual loan is like a 1%. So it's very low interest. And for business loans, it's like 3%. So it's pretty low interest compared to what's out there right now.
Thank you.
Sure.
Anything else for Tim? Thanks, Tim.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Morning.
Good morning.
The first item I had was accommodation. We're going to push off until October. The agencies that I was going to commend weren't able to make it today. The South Hornell and Canastillo Fire Departments for their work. When we did it was a search for a missing person, a 2-day search. That turned into a search and recovery, and they were instrumental in helping us in that. So I want to commend them, but they'll be here next month and we'll make sure we commend them then. My second item is to accept a $50 donation for our canine unit from the EJ Cottrell Memorial Library in Atlanta, New York.
I'll move it.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Our third item is to accept a $500 donation from Kiwanis Club, and that goes towards bike helmets. That's what they support every year.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Fourth item is to accept the 2022 Stop DWI grant plan. It's virtually identical to last year's. There's really no changes to it for the distribution and the amount of money that go to the different agencies.
Second.
Let's Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you. And our last thing, next to the last thing, approve the Arcport and Hornell SRO agreement. As I communicated earlier, we're doing a hybrid between Arcport and Hornell, where we're actually sharing a full-time deputy, and they're reimbursing each half to split that deputy halftime between each school district. It's one of the former BOCES deputies. And the goal is that the deputy that we're sending is an EMT and also can do home visits and can attend to students that don't live in the city of Hornell for the Hornell district and be primary for Arcport 20 hours a week at each place.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
So do you have to control the scheduling, or the two school districts going to take care of the scheduling of his 20 hours in each building?
It's a joint discussion. Each school district, the superintendents get along very, very well, and they communicate almost daily. And they're going to communicate with the SRO and with us what hours at which place on what days, and we'll make it happen that way. Yep. The goal is to meet the needs of the districts.
What does a home visit entail?
So sometimes students are visited at home, students that are at risk especially. They get a home visit with a social worker and a deputy so that they can keep tabs on that student, make sure that things are going well. Sometimes we go with Child Protective Services to do home visits also. And it's always in with what they're doing as an SRO for the school. Our retiree SROs that we have in most districts can't do home visits because of their legal designation as a special patrol officer. They are only responsible to protect the building and the occupants thereof. So the deputy can actually go and assist on the social work end of the home visit for the at-risk students. Mm-hmm. It's something that all the superintendents are very interested in. These are the only ones that get it. So, yeah.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. I have one more thing that's not on the agenda. This Saturday is the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attack on 9/11. As such, there's several memorials going around the county that we'll be attending. One I want to bring your attention to is the First Responder Honor Park in the town of Irwin. It's at 11 a.m. And the reason I want to bring it to your attention is that two county agencies are being commended at that service. Matthew Marmer from Public Health is going to receive the award for First Responder of the Year. He was submitted for his outstanding work during COVID. And this is the first year they're doing a First Responder Agency of the Year. And the sheriff's office was submitted by another agency for that, and we're going to be awarded that. So we'll be the first ever First Responder Agency of the Year recipient at the First Responder Tri-County Honor Park. And Matthew Marmer will be receiving a commendation and the honor of being First Responder of the Year for his outstanding work with public health in setting up all the testing sites and all of the vaccination sites and delivering all of the equipment, the personal protective equipment that he did. He really did it as an unsung hero. He did a phenomenal job all through last year. So I invite all of you to be there at the First Responder Park at 11 a.m. And keep all your first responders in your prayers that day. It's for all of us that remember that day in the aftermath. It's something. So that's all I have today.
And former legislator Don Kreff, who's instrumental yes. in that part, contacted me. I think the county is also being recognized for all the work that they've done in helping to build and support that park. So he asked me to be there. They're setting some new monument this morning there because there was a huge crane
that
TNR had, and a big piece of granite was coming in.
That's for Father Lou, because Father Lou Brown was also one of the founders of that, along with Don Kreff, Ernie Danforth, and Pete Bierweiler. And he passed away last year, so they're doing a memorial for him, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the actual location or address of it?
if you get off on the first Gang Mills exit after you start down 99, it's right there. Right there
in front you can see it on your left-hand
corner.
Yeah. Forest Drive.
Yeah, it's Forest Drive.
Yep.
Is the street.
In South Hamilton.
Gang Mills exit.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, don't take the one for Walmart. Take the one as if you were going to the transfer station.
Thank you, Sheriff. I'll find it on my second or third try.
But it promises to be a pretty good ceremony. So thank
Sheriff,
you.
I have a question. Sheriff, if they're doing the memorial for Father Lou Brown and for the first responders, is that all going to be together?
It will 11? Be. All at 11, yeah.
And
yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah, it probably will be, yeah. It usually gets a really good turnout. We've supported it since its inception. Matter of fact, I met with Don and Ernie when they were first putting it together, and we post the colors every year for them and have since it started. So it's a nice ceremony.
And it's representation from the three towns.
Yes.
Ben, Shemong, and
Scott. Yep. Yep.
Thank you.
Tim's always there in uniform too. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey.
Good. Do you need something or we're good? Oh, okay. I don't hear so well.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Couple requests today. First is to, and actually at the time of the agenda, it was a little different. So was to do a vacant position. Now it's going to be to hire an individual. And instead of the 41.4, we'd like to put it at 41.708. And what that actually does is that other salary was the salary of the previous incumbent that had left, but it due to raises and such, it was not actually on one of the grid steps, which we're trying to really keep people on the grid steps. So we're the individual that he's asked for has more than enough experience. It's the part-time position and it's half of step 12.
The increase was Nate's request, not mine. This is the Tom Bowes Corning City Court part-time ADA position we discussed previously. Chris Ferratella is coming in to take that position. He's got about 15 years experience, so his experience mirrors that of Tom Bowes. He is, we're actually luring an attorney out of Chemung County. He was working in the Chemung County Public Defender's Office and is coming over here. So he's also moved into the city, so we're happy to have him as part of our bar and want to keep him here as our number of attorneys goes down. But he's basically somebody who can come in with no training, pick up the ball and run and do what needs to be done. So we're excited to have him as an add to the office with Tom leaving to become Irwin Town Court Judge.
So this is just a replacement.
That's correct. Nothing new.
To another. So
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
I'll let you go right into the next one.
Okay. Yep. The next request is also really mine. It's to we're asking for a local law or maybe an amendment of our existing local law. I'm not sure which one it is. I'll defer to Jen on that. To allow for full-time ADAs to not be residents of Steuben County. We have a local law that allows part-time ADAs to be non-residents. We do not have one that allows full-time ADAs, and that's required for them to work under the county law. Given our current recruiting process, it will give us the ability to search to a wider pool of folks. My preference will be to continue to first search for Steuben County applicants and to make a preference to folks move into Steuben County, but there may be situations where either they can't or won't. And given the difficulties we have filling positions, this gives us a little bit more flexibility. Local counties are doing it. I don't know if Chemung is. I know I've given you a list in the email I sent to you, but I know that Yates has a similar law. Allegheny does. I know Cortland does. I know Livingston does. Most of our competing counties locally have a similar law.
So according to Hilda, we passed some legislation back in 2016 to allow the part-time to be out of county residents.
That's correct. Yeah. And right now, one of my part-timers does not live in the county.
What was the reasoning in 2016 of doing part-time and not all?
The reasoning was in 2016, we were going to do a contract with, it was another issue. We couldn't hire anybody. And so we did a shared services contract with Schuyler County. And together we hired an ADA, and that ADA was living outside the county. So we couldn't find anybody to fill our part-time spot. They couldn't find anybody for theirs. So we created a spot where we had a part-time ADA working for both counties and couldn't live in both counties. So that was the basis for it then. And again, we have one part-time ADA living outside the county now. Our preference is to hire again folks who live in the county, and it will always be our preference.
Do I have a motion, a second, so we can discuss this?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
Further discussion?
I just have another question. It's not even for Brooks. It's just in general. I understand elected people have to live in the county, but it seems like just in the short time that I've been here, we've discussed letting people live outside the county, inside the county on a lot of different departments. I understand we want people, just like Brooks just said, that's always first choice. But what was the law written because of to make people live in the county to start with?
It's the public officer's law. So to be a public officer under the state statute, you have to be a public officer of the county in which you work and resides, Steuben County. So that's where the requirement for certain positions comes from. In senior Brooks's staff, the ADAs qualify as public officers. So they are allowed to waive residency. That's where it comes from.
Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Next slide. Okay, so I had a couple of other things on the agenda. I guess first is modification of the terms and fines for traffic diversion program. Really, this is an addendum to the traffic diversion program, a little bit of a different program. And I kind of set it forth in the email I sent out to everybody, and Scott forwarded. Thank you very much for sending it to everybody. I just sent it to the committees. Diversion management has come to us and said that they have another sort of related program in traffic diversion that deals with uninsured drivers. And to be very frank, uninsured drivers are a significant issue. They're very difficult for us to deal with as prosecutors, and leave a lot of folks hanging when they get involved in accidents. So what this is a way to reduce that. And that's the primary goal here. According to traffic diversion, traffic diversion management, this is not a large money-making program. It's a program really designed primarily traffic safety. They, just like our current traffic diversion program, they carry all the risk. There is no upfront cost for the county, no fixed cost for the county. There is no risk for the county in the process. What this program does is they will provide for us, I believe, either 10, somewhere between 10 and 12 plate reader locations throughout the county, just like they're on police cars. You may remember that years ago, we started investing capital projects money, and we still have a line for that floating around for plate readers for intelligence for drug cases and other criminal cases. They have been instrumental in solving some extremely significant cases here in Steuben County, including the Knight Rider homicide that happened in Corning a few years ago. So they're a huge asset. Our goal was to have two or three in the county. They're going to provide 12 at no cost to us. They do all of the maintenance, all of the upkeep, all of the internet wiring, everything that goes along with it. What these plate readers will do is, one, they will track plates, which that's the huge positive externality here, and what's really great for law enforcement, is that we'll have control over putting additional data in. So if we want to track a hot plate, a drug dealer out of Rochester, or we have a suspect plate in a crime or something like that, we have the ability to access all of these cameras and utilize them for our purposes. As far as the diversion management program is concerned, they'll track every plate that goes through. They'll get a hot list of uninsured vehicles from New York State, Pennsylvania, and they have five or six other states. They're only choosing states that update their information weekly or less, so that we don't end up hitting people who have gotten their insurance fixed and there's a long DMV delay. And New York State updates theirs, I believe, weekly. Pennsylvania is even faster than we are. When a car that's not insured and is on one of those hot lists hits the reader, that will flag the plate, they'll take a picture of it, they will forward it to a person. They have to be a law enforcement officer here in Steuben County who will compare the plate photograph we have to the hot list. If that officer matches up the process, and diversion management will pay that officer, they're out of their process, they pay the fee for that person. The officer will let diversion management know that, yes, this is in fact a violation of the law. And then diversion management takes over. They send a letter to the owner of the vehicle because a no insurance violation attaches to the owner, not the driver. So they send a letter to the owner saying your car has been flagged at this location operating with no insurance. It's a violation of the law. And you have two choices, either enter a diversion program that involves the sort of the same education piece as our current education traffic diversion program has, along with a piece on no insurance. And they have to get their vehicle insured, and traffic diversion will actually, or diversion management actually helps them with that process to work with DMV, get them reinsured, get their vehicle either off the roadway or insured, one or the other. And they have to sign a promise that they will, one, they know they have to be insured, and two, that they will maintain insurance. Again, it's just a piece of paper, but it reinforces that. It also, if they get stopped again, helps us with the prosecution down the road because they have knowledge. The cost for the driver in these situations is $350. And if they pay that fee, go through diversion, the ticket never gets written. So this is a pre-violation diversion program. If they do not complete the program, or they don't want to sign up, then the law enforcement agency, and then I've talked to the sheriff who just left, so I'll speak for him. We'd have them write the violation and serve it upon the defendant. If they're out of state, we'll communicate with them, or out of the area, we'll communicate with other agencies and serve them. And then we'll just prosecute those as regular tickets here in Steuben County, offering up our standard diversion program, or prosecute them one way or the other. The huge benefit for the driver is that every traffic, every no insurance ticket comes with a $500 civil penalty once it's written. So to avoid that $500 civil penalty, and then you add the fees onto it, you're talking about a ticket that costs about $700. This ticket costs them about half of what it is, and provides one, the insurance reduction course and the education, and two, provides them with assistance in getting their vehicle insured and getting their DMV issues fixed.
So Brooks, somebody's yes. going to lose revenue if we install this.
No one's going to lose revenue. These are tickets that would not otherwise be written. That's the difference here is this is not, these folks are not being stopped by police cars. These folks are driving on our highways, and we're only going to find out if they get stopped for speeding or if they hit your car and don't have insurance. So these are tickets, no one is losing revenue on this at all, because it's revenue that wouldn't be generated. So this is a pre-stop, pre-ticket. We're not dismissing tickets. We're not withdrawing tickets like we are in the regular diversion program. This is a situation where these tickets likely would never be written. We don't have that number of plate readers out there. We're not going to review that many cars. I mean, every car that basically travels through Steuben County will be reviewed to see if they have insurance. And as far as the difference here is, traffic diversion is asking, or diversion management is asking to split the revenues because of the capital cost. So whereas they only take a small portion for each ticket that is written, and they go through the diversion program and management, here they have the capital outlay of these plate readers. And I'm guessing, I don't know what they cost. I know initially for us to put 3 points up in Steuben County, we were looking at $200,000 as an outlay. I know that since that time they have gotten less expensive, but they certainly haven't become free. So this is that capital piece is what they are picking up for us, as well as all the ancillary services that we don't have to worry about. So we would split the revenues. They would take $175 per ticket, and the other $175 would come back to the county to offset the cost of prosecution of the other tickets, the ones that are written, and also to the law enforcement agency that assists us with this process.
So you say nobody's going to lose revenue, but the $500 penalty sitting out there for not having insurance, if somebody goes through this program, is the state not going to lose that?
No, because the ticket's never being written. That's the issue, is they're never, if we don't put up these cameras, we're never going to know these folks are operating on our highways unless they get stopped for something else. And in a lot of cases, law enforcement doesn't write that no insurance ticket because they know the civil penalty is there, and they give somebody a break on the roadway. That's a reality we deal with. The other time we'll find out is when they have an accident. And we have to deal with the fact they don't have insurance and can't pay for whatever they did wrong. So
there is no revenue that's going to be lost because these are tickets that would not be written otherwise. If they're stopped by a police car and written a no insurance ticket, it doesn't go into this program.
Aaron?
Yeah, I'm concerned that it seems almost like we're privatizing law enforcement in the county, and you know, that it's settlement. Basically, you know, you send in this money and we're not going to prosecute you. And I guess I'd like, Jennifer, have you looked through this and what the legalities are here, or?
So it doesn't fit under our current local law, the structure of it at all. So something would have to be amended or rewritten. But because under the current structure, as you recall, the money is split under intermunicipal agreements with the police agency's city that wrote the ticket. So it goes back to the roads. I have some similar concerns as you are expressing, Aaron. It's the law enforcement saying, I'm going to ticket you unless you pay this. So let's say you don't pay it and then you get a ticket. Okay. Currently, these tickets are running through traffic diversion on their own. So if Corning City Police wrote a ticket that include lack of insurance, you can qualify for traffic diversion. So that's kind of a concern of mine, because I understand it's pre-ticket, but it's by a private entity who Brooks is explaining is spending money back to the sheriff's office to do their statutory job of writing tickets. So that's where my concern lies. The sheriff's office, in my opinion, should not get paid to do what they're already required to do by law. So doesn't quite match up in my mind under the local law. That doesn't mean it couldn't be rewritten or drafted in a different way that works, but I agree with Aaron on that.
Well, Aaron, if I may, I think that's a little bit backwards. This is not privatization of a law enforcement function. The law enforcement function, which is comparing the information provided by the plate reader to the hot list, which is what a police officer does every day if they make a traffic stop, is going to be done by a police officer from Steuben County. So there is no privatization of law enforcement here. The law enforcement function will be done by law enforcement.
Private agency is getting half the proceeds.
They're getting half the proceeds to pay for the capital cost of the plate readers that allow us to do that enforcement. Basically, we are paying them back. Well, we probably never will, but we are paying back that cost. And that's what they are getting money for, is for the cost of the plate readers and administering the program, administering the education piece. And also they provide a help desk to assist these folks in getting insurance back. The idea is that, quite frankly, what they've done this in, I think, 6 or 7 states so far. They're looking at two additional counties in Steuben, in New York State are looking at this right now, along with Steuben. What they have seen in the states they have done this in, which are primarily in the Southeast, is that over time, the number of tickets actually goes down, because the idea is compliance goes up. What we want to have is insured drivers on our roadways. That's the risk that's out there. And if you've ever had to go to local court and answer to somebody whose car was hit by somebody who had no insurance, and all I can do is give them a ticket for unsafe backing or something like that, and explain that the $3,000 or $4,000 that you didn't have a policy for, and they don't have a policy for, comes out of your pocket. That's what we're trying to avoid with this. This is not a large money-making proposition. We're not going to write thousands of these tickets or these situations every year. We don't know exactly how many will come through, but it's not going to be a tremendous number. But the issue is, we want to make our highway safer. This is a true traffic safety program, as opposed to being one that's more aimed at education and revenue generation situation.
So the additional revenue, according to your proposal, would be split between your office and the sheriff's office.
Right, because that's where the two costs are for the
program. The thing is, I'm assuming that those additional revenues would just offset additional costs we already have for each of your offices. We're not going to add any additional programs.
No, we're not adding anything to do that. No, this is the huge benefit that we have for law enforcement that makes this such an attractive program is those plate readers. The ability to have those plate readers out there and utilize them for law enforcement purposes simply cannot be underestimated. We there are already a number of plate readers operating in Steuben County that we cannot access, either run by federal law enforcement or state clandestine law enforcement. We found out about them during the Knight Rider homicide. Without them, we would not have been able to solve that case, track a vehicle coming from Monroe County to kill a person here in the city of Corning and go back. That ability, the other thing would give us to do is have our own internal Amber Alert system. If somebody is missing, we could track anybody driving around Steuben County at any of those 10 points and see if the plate goes through. So it is, that is the huge benefit I see to this program and the reduction in overall uninsured driving in the county. Their experience is compliance goes up over time when these plate readers are up and people are aware of them, and we can make people aware of it.
Yeah. So just my two cents. I mean, obviously, like Brooks said, getting plate readers would be a benefit to us instead of having to, you know, budget that and such. The where my concern lies is not having any other counties, you know, up and running in New York State yet. That's sort of, in my view, it'd be good to have a little experience that way. Jen and I are seeing from the stop arm school bus stop arm program, which was a state law, and it seems like a no-brainer. There's a lot of nuances. So the Broome and maybe Dutchess were the first ones in. And so we're getting a lot of experience from them about, and we haven't brought it to you because Jen's doing a lot of legwork, and I'm talking to my counterparts too about how does a program like this function within the confines of whatever it has to be. So I guess that's just my feedback, is not having New York State experience to me is a big question mark.
And I think that's what I was saying when I was saying that I think there might be a way for it to work. I'm just not sure that this is the way, and it's always easier, like with that arm on the school buses, to watch Broome go first. And as Broome goes first, Schuyler County's attorney and myself are pointing out all the situations and problems with it. It's easier to sit back and catch those.
That they have acknowledged as well.
Yeah, that they've acknowledged that we didn't think of that. So that's part of my hesitancy with this, is nobody's doing it.
Who would own the plate readers throughout the life of them?
They own them.
Where would they be placed? On public land, on signs, on how would they be?
They are completely responsible for placing them. The examples they used that they have used in other places, they have rented space on billboards. They have rented space on people's barns. They talked about, there's some, most of the folks where they choose on private land. And most of the folks where it's placed are extremely happy because they benefit from having the best internet service on the planet, because that's what services these things. And so they'll upgrade their internet and make sure it happens. We have no revenue.
Kelly wishes to have one put on her.
I'd like one too, quite frankly, but that's our reality, is that they have all of they take all the risk with the cameras. They do all the maintenance piece. If they decide this program isn't making enough to pay them back, they can take them back tomorrow and shut the program down. I mean, that's the risk we take, but we don't take any risk with capital cost on this at all. And I will, to the issue raised by Jen and Jack, one of the reasons that they have come to us and asked us to be one of the first couple programs in the state, they're looking at us, and I think Otsego is the first two programs, is because we have traffic diversion up and running. We have a relationship with them. We are working with them, and they have seen what we have here in Steuben County. And we are riper than most counties to have this in place, because we have three interstates running through the county. So they are looking at us and making this offer. This is not a statewide offer to everybody to go to set this program up. They have come to us and said, look, we have a good working relationship with you guys. We see the volume coming through Steuben County with the interstates you have. This is something that we think makes sense and makes it a good test county for us. So, they're coming to us, making an offer to us to do this. So I don't know that everybody else did the same deal.
One of my concerns is the more we add to this driver diversion program, sitting out there, is the state at some point was losing revenue through this program going to come and look at us and say, you know, this is illegal? Do we have that situation that could be in the future? I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, what they could at some point tell us, we cannot do this. And, you know, they didn't like the way some counties were doing things, and they wrote 1804, which caused us to shut down our program once before and rewrite it. The nice thing about this possibility is there is no risk that goes with it. We're not investing anything in this program. we have nothing. We're not adding people. We're not adding equipment. We're not adding, there's no budget outlay. So if the state comes in and says, you know what, you're not doing this anymore, then we simply turn it off. And it's found money for a period of time. I don't think there is no history of the state coming back and saying, give fine money back. There were some towns, the only thing I can compare it to is there were some towns and villages years ago, I think Hammondsport was one of them, that had their own traffic codes. So they were writing, they'd write a village code violation instead of an insurance ticket, or a village code violation instead of a speeding ticket. And at some point the state said, that's unlawful. And we have filled the field by the traffic code. You can't do this. And they simply made them all stop. But there wasn't a call to repay any fines or revenues. And that was a statewide issue. I just know Hammondsport happened to have one because we saw some of those tickets come in the office years ago. So I'm aware of it, that's the only situation I can think of that's comparable. If the state turns the spigot off, they turn the spigot off. The problem is that these tickets, it's very difficult for them to do that because prosecution tickets rest within the district attorney's discretion. What we prosecute and what we don't and how we deal with it is something that is left under the Constitution to the DA's office. So whether we want to do a diversion program and withdraw a ticket or not is something that's up to us. They could probably tie up the funding if they wanted to. But the current statewide model across the board is to push pre-arrest diversion in all kinds of different things. So this program is actually consistent with that, with what is being pushed by the state legislature.
The only thing I can say, I think it'd be a good program. I got tail ended in Hornell one time and they didn't have insurance. So I think the program would be a good program to, because you never know who is not keeping their insurance up. It's an ongoing thing. Could be from one month to the other. But if you get hit by somebody that don't have insurance, you would like this program.
I've actually got 3 points that I'd like to ask about it. Instead of the state losing revenue, the state actually has potential to make revenue, right? Because if they don't take the class, mm-hmm. then they're going to be getting a ticket.
That's correct.
The state in general might make more money. The state has no chance of losing. They're actually a chance of making.
That's correct. Because if tickets are written and prosecuted, they will get something out of it. Yes,
exactly. The second one is, can we end this at any time?
Nothing, this is not a term contract. Well, that'll be how we write it. And I had a meeting with Jen and Craig about the contract. And that's something that I think we can certainly write in there. I don't think there's any, and the downside is they can end at any time. So it cuts both ways.
All right. And my third question with it is, right now, if somebody gets stopped with driving without insurance, isn't it automatic loss of license for 1 year on top of that penalty?
There is a loss of license. I don't know that it's a year. I think there's a suspension period that I think is I think maybe up to a year, but I think it's a time of the time they're uninsured.
Okay.
We don't prosecute many of these tickets, so I really can't tell you. That's not something that comes up.
I just wondered,
they're rarely written.
If the ticket was issued,
mm-hmm.
would that still be on the table of somebody losing license? Or
if they are ticketed and prosecuted, then all the regular penalties would apply. If they are ticketed and run through the diversion program, then they would not be.
Now, I guess what I was looking for clarity on that is, if you were driving my car,
right,
and it was uninsured,
mm-hmm.
and you got pulled over by a state trooper today,
yep.
Does the driving without insurance go on you?
No, the driving would go on me for driving the car. Yes. The uninsured motor vehicle would go on you as the owner of the vehicle.
Okay.
And that's what we are not going to have any driver tickets issued in this situation. Okay. Because
so it'd be just uninsured motor vehicle.
Correct. Now. This is like the stoplight cameras that they use, or speeding cameras in some state, where it's all civil. We don't identify the driver, we identify the vehicle. And under the statute, this is a bad vehicle statute, not a bad person statute. So it's the vehicle it's the owner who's guilty for allowing it to be used on the roadway.
Thank you.
So the legal question is, do we need to rewrite the law?
I think in speaking with Jen, we do need to rewrite the law.
My advice would be a separate law. I would not like to see the DDP program that's up and running now be jeopardized if there was something that this being the first one to go forward. I would like it separate, because mm-hmm. That's a revenue generator, and that I feel pretty confident about when we rewrote it as far as being able to defend that. This, I do not have that confidence level at this point, so I would not like to jeopardize that.
So I guess the thing of it is we should wait to see what this new local law would be before we do anything.
Well,
we can start working on something and drafting it and see if we can get it together for next month's meeting.
So do you need a motion from us or anything to even put it
out? We're just putting you guys on notice. This program is out there. We'd like to do it and discussing the idea of a local law until we bring it to you. I don't know. That's up to you guys. It's something to vote on or not, but.
Well, I think we just need to see what the local law is going to be so that we can have a discussion on it further and then vote on it. So whether to push it through to the full board. So
I would be surprised if this is even a moneymaker for diversion management, because you say we don't have that many of them and it's going to decrease over time as you're getting more and more people insured. If you did 20 a month, that's 240 a year. That's $82,000 at the $350 fee. Mm-hmm. So they're getting 40, they're getting half of that.
Right.
That's not a lot of return if the investment on 10 or 12 of these camera sets is as expensive as you say.
Oh, there's no question. I think it'd take them 10 years to make their money back if we run numbers like that or even better. And that's why they told us it's not a moneymaker. They don't expect it to be. It's ancillary to the traffic diversion program. I'm not sure if it's a long run program that they want to try to get into other states and get funding from insurance companies, or what the end game is for them as far as how this is. The benefit for us is just huge. The cameras, the benefit to law enforcement to having those cameras throughout the county, our ability to track drug dealers, to track missing children, to look for adults who are incapacitated and wandering off driving their car, like we had to do with my own aunt a couple of years ago. That gives us that capacity in a whole bunch of places in Steuben County at a price point that we could zero, that we would never ever be able to afford. Quite frankly, I'm not sure we're ever going to be able to afford putting cameras in anywhere in Steuben County. But just the fact that we use them in a major homicide case to solve what wouldn't have been an unsolved homicide showed me the value. And we had them all the way down to New Jersey and back up to Monroe County and all over the place. They're there and they're operating right now. And if we had access to that kind of information, it could make us far more effective in targeting our law enforcement, in targeting our drug enforcement, and also in keeping our community safe.
I guess my second question would be to Jen. As you mentioned, your concern that an outside agency would be paying deputies to do what they're already supposed to be doing and being paid for by us. How is that any different than the diversion program that we used to have clerk in the DA's office manage that? We were paying them to do that job for an outside service.
Well, that person was already on staff and had other tasks and duties that were required under civil service. So
they're also on staff and they're also doing other duties that are required.
I think my comfort level would be better if it was the actual deputy reviewing the license plate readers from the get-go, because that would be their job under the law. And then they could report that to the outside agency to issue the letter. It seems a little off-putting to have an outside agency that's not law enforcement saying, hey, you broke the law, see?
No, sending it. Jen, that is the way it works. I didn't explain it clearly, but.
That was the way you explained it in your writing. So I thought initially when you and I discussed it, the license plate readers were going to be read by the deputies.
They are. What happens is the license plate readers are read by the deputies, and it's and compared to a hot list as it comes through. That's a computer generated list that the deputy has to provide. Diversion management does not have access to the hot list of uninsured vehicles. That's why we have to use law enforcement. So they provide, the hot list is provided by a deputy. I'm confused, Scott, I'm sorry.
Well, so diversion management, their cameras see.
They see every car that
license
goes by.
Plates.
Correct.
They have to bounce it off some hot list in order to notify the deputy, here's a potential
violator. And the hot list, basically the hot list is assigned to the deputy. Deputy can access the hot list and allows that information to be bounced off the hot list that's maintained. Once it flags it, the deputy looks at the picture and looks at the hot list and confirms that this is actually what happened. It's basically the same thing they do in the car when they're driving around with a plate reader in a car. It flags the plate reader in a car takes a picture of a plate that is either stolen or uninsured or something like that. They look at it on the screen, they compare, they call it in 911. 911 confirms that's on the hot list and away they go. That's the process. So maybe I explained it poorly and I apologize, but the way it works is all the comparison is done by law enforcement. This is not diversion management telling us you have a violation. This is a law enforcement officer saying there is a violation here and notifying diversion management to then begin the process. And then if they don't complete or engage in the process, then it comes back.
Kelly?
I just wanted to say that I think that one of the benefits of this from a public safety perspective is that we truly have no idea how many vehicles are out there that are uninsured. And this increases the potential to catch those. And so if you catch them and you have, I mean, we have no idea. And what other things might you catch on those readers that we have no idea going on as well? So I think that I have full faith and confidence in Jen to forge the way and write it up and develop her comfort level. So I think it's worthwhile.
Can I add something this is Noel Twilliger. Can I just add something to Brooks's sure. items here? Just so the legislators understand that these cameras won't just be mounted on the interstates. These cameras are also going to be mounted on sections of the county that we do not have a great deal of patrol on. 417, 415, I made sure that when I spoke with them that those were areas that we needed coverage. And they also agreed because of the vehicles that cross over from Pennsylvania and into New York. So, and also just to add and reassure the legislators, diversion management will not make a move until the deputy or the designee of the district attorney reviews the comparisons, and then that information is forwarded to diversion management. So unless the sheriff's office or a police agency makes the determination that the vehicle is in violation of no insurance on the roadway, diversion management does not make any movement on it.
Thank you.
So
Aaron?
This is Hilda. It looks like the benefits certainly outweigh the risks. So even though I'm not on the committee, I think it's a good move.
I had a question on, because I was confused about how the process was going to work until you just clarified. So a couple of questions. Does the communication, when there's been a violation that the deputy recognizes, does that come from diversion management? And is the sheriff going to need more staffing to have someone monitor this?
The communication of a violation comes from the deputy or law enforcement person who observes the violation. It sort of runs both ways. The camera will, through the process, the camera picks up every plate that comes through, and then it compares through communication from diversion management to the sheriff's office. It compares to a hot list, and then it says these are potential violations. Look at these, and then the officer is responsible for looking at the photograph and checking the hot list to make sure those two plates match. Make sure it's really a New York State plate. Make sure the numbers aren't transposed. Make sure the camera's functioning properly, that you can read it. All of those things. So, and then that deputy tells diversion management, yes, we have a violation. You know, trigger this plate, and here's the address and name of the person, because they look up in the system like they're supposed to, just like they would if they're going to write a ticket. Here's the person. So it's a law enforcement generated information, as far as that's concerned. As far as cost, hiring another person, I don't know this is going to be a full-time job. I don't think it would be. And it's something that, again, diversion management is going to pay for. So if it's an overtime offered situation or something like that, we haven't gone that far in particularizing it with the sheriff, but we know the cost would be zero to our county, because it'll be covered by diversion management. They'll cover the rate of whatever it is.
So at this point, we'll just wait to see the local law. And if you people have any questions, write them down and bring them up once the local law is presented. So,
and we can probably have somebody from diversion management here to talk with us about it too, who can be, this is a technical process. I apologize if I'm not explaining it well, but I am not, as you all know, a particularly computer savvy person. So we can have them explain it, but one of the things they really emphasized was no move is made without, this is a law enforcement program. They don't decide violations. They don't write tickets. They don't decide who's involved. That's all has to be done by someone who is a police officer in our jurisdiction.
and I don't want to keep this thing going on forever, John, but to follow up what Aaron asked, I think this could be a resource issue in the sheriff's office, because you have a dozen cameras snapshotting every car that drives by. Some deputy has to sit there and look at those.
Well, they'll look at the ones that hit the highest. Incremental
work from what they're doing now. So that means additional resource. I mean, those cameras don't take the night off.
No, they don't.
They don't take weekends off. So diversion management is going to expect that that data is looked at and analyzed in order for the process to continue and them to ultimately make some money back.
Right. And part of it is the data is screened, so they'll only be looking at vehicles they believe are in violation. That's a computer process. You compare plate 123 XYZ to the hot list each time it comes through. If it goes off, then it goes in the queue for the deputy to review and look at that picture and look at that plate. So it's not going to be, no one's going to have to look at every single car that drives through Steuben County. Nobody could. It's not possible. They're going to have to look at only the ones that might be in violation. And then there'll be funding provided for that. Now, whether that means overtime funding or additional funding, I don't know how we do that yet. We sort of have to figure that out. We have to get an idea what the volume is, and we don't really know yet. But one thing diversion management has indicated is they will cover that cost as part of whatever that cost is as part of our program. So the goal would not be to take those folks away from something else, but would be either to provide overtime for officers or some other methodology to do that.
It would seem to me that if you have a hot list, there should be some coordination in the software to sit out there and notify the deputy or whoever that, you know, this person is in violation.
Right. And that's what it would do is they're running all these plate numbers. They identify them through the camera, run them all through the hot list, and they give
that
a queue.
That is correct, and the deputy wouldn't be reviewing this. It would be a function of the software to sit out there and notify the deputy.
That correct.
This plate.
But he told us that only the deputies can see the hot list. They don't share that with private agencies.
Right, but they can share the review process. I mean, do you know how it gets reviewed? I apologize, but that's...
It's a comparison. It's a computer analysis comparison between the hot list and the images that are seen. I piloted a program when this originally started in Monroe County over 15 years ago, plate readers. It's just a comparison of a hot list to the video camera taken. And then that item, that specific plate, is then forwarded via computer message to the deputy sheriff or the designee of the district attorney, and for review. That's the only item that they review. And those items are singled out. And then from that review, the deputy makes a determination through another data entry with DMV that he does on his own, independent, to check the validity of the insurance not being in effect. And if it's not in effect, he then forwards it to diversion management for diversion. And the process starts with diversion management there with that.
I think we need some additional technical information, because in that description, to me, again, it sounds like that the company is reviewed. The company has access to
the hot list. Right. If they're bouncing their, if they're using it in their software to bounce the pictures against, then they have access.
So who generates the hot list?
That's generated by the DMVs of New York State and Pennsylvania are aware, and there is a list. That list is accessible by law enforcement. So absent a law enforcement player, diversion management can't look at that.
So I think we need some clarification.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah, we need technical information. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get that together for you.
I'm pretty confused. First, they don't see the hot list. Then they do see the hot list. Then the computer has a hot list. Well, who puts it in the computer? And the other thing is, if these people aren't making money, they're not going to be in the business. Nobody is that stupid. So if they're generating and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for cameras, they've got some idea of how they're going to be making money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just an idea that came out of the air.
No,
they have an idea how they're going to make money.
Well, making money is by splitting that $350 fee.
No, that's not going to pay for it. Not at the cost you give us.
I don't know. That's the issue. How they're going to make money? That wasn't something that they talked to us. They said it's not going to be a large money maker, but they may make money on it. I'm guessing they will. And if they don't, they'll shut us down and move some their cameras and go play somewhere else.
I think we've gone around and around and around, and we still don't understand what we're talking about.
Is there any indication? Yeah. Did you give us the cost of what these plate readers are?
I don't know what they're paying for them. I know what seven or 8 years ago, we were looking at installing three, which in was like $200,000 or three sets of them in Steuben County. But I think their costs are far lower than ours. So I can't tell you. We can find out. Unless it's proprietary.
That would answer Mr. Swackhammer's question, whether they're going to make any money or not, if we knew what their initial cost was.
Right. So. And we can try to do that. I don't know what it is.
All right. Moving right along. We're going to wait till the local law happens. So.
Okay. So I just want to give you an update on our office reorganization process. As you know, I brought to you quite a while ago that a member of the Corning Incorporated volunteered to give us an organizational specialist to work with our office in looking at how we organize and to make us more efficient, particularly as we move into a new office and we have a number of other tasks going on. So Corning has given me somebody. We're working with a guy named Mike Rayburn, who's got a 30 plus year track record in this process. And he helped sort of seat and organize how they did headquarters in Corning. He's done stuff for Photonics and other divisions and groups big and small across Corning. So he comes with very high reviews from folks I've spoken with about who he is and what he does. The first thing we did was put together a steering committee of sort of outside folks who have dealt with our office to oversee the process. On that committee is former legislator Joe Horisky, to represent the legislative voice. We have the sheriff to represent law enforcement voice. Chuck Vail is another senior Corning executive who did a lot of significant HR organizational stuff. He is on that list. Judge Furfer, a retired Steuben County Court judge, has volunteered to be on our program as well. John Tunney, I know he's employed by the office, but also he has had contact with more offices in New York State and been doing this for a very long time, is on a steering committee, as is Pam Ianey, who formerly worked in our office and helped sort of train and set up the processes we have now. So that's our steering committee. And we have, Mike has spent an hour and a half to 2 hours talking with each one of those folks, getting their concerns about how the office functions and how we deal with each one of those sectors of the folks we have to respond to. He has met with my staff, meeting with them anywhere from 45 minutes to 2 hours a person. And he and I have spent about 10 hours together going over some of the initial results and some of my concerns about office functioning. So right now he is in the midst of putting together a plan, what he sees as our strengths and weaknesses, how to organize the office down to where we'll sit in our new dwelling to work most efficiently together, what our command structure should be, and how we should function. He did, and I was one of the reasons I was bringing this up now is he noticed there is a significant, what he thinks would be key to that plan is an officer manager position within the office. We have done office management by using our attorneys thus far, senior folks like Jim Miller before he retired, Dave Wallace, and Amanda Chafee have been doing the staff management piece. Mike's initial analysis is that's a waste of resources given what they make and also our need to have attorneys focus on attorney activity. So his focus was on the idea of that we should be thinking about an office manager as part of this program. And that's likely going to be, well, not likely, he said it is going to be part of his plan. I don't know what the plan is going to be yet because he's still working on it. But he said, given our time constraints, I wanted to make you aware that's a reality he'll be looking at. I have talked to Nate. I understand that'll be a civil service position. It does exist out there as it is. We do have a zero-based paralegal position floating around. That's the only ad I think he's talking about within the office, but I don't know. The other piece was possibly a contract with somebody, and his suggestion was Pam Ianey, Finger Lakes Paralegal, to train in the new process for our office to get it up and running and to be able to hand it off to the office manager, knowing that office manager process of creating a position or changing the position, then trying to recruit and hire, given the, I don't think there's an existing list for that floating around any place, might take some time. So those are two things that are out there in the offing. I just wanted to make you aware of, but Mike has put in I don't know how many hours, probably several hundred already in this process. The office is very excited. Folks are engaged. My understanding is everybody cooperated with him and spent a lot of time talking to him about issues. And the steering committee had some great suggestions about how we focus better for courts and for law enforcement and to interact with you folks. So we're all very excited about the process. It is moving forward, and we should have some good results that put us in a position to be more efficient and to be able to do what we need to do. So, and that was our first, the first and foremost goal here is to be more efficient and to be able to deliver everything we need to deliver in a cost-effective manner. And Mike understands that.
So Brooks, when do you think the final report will be out?
Our goal is to have our plan set and ready when we move into our new building, which will be October. And so that's the goal. It's an aggressive goal, but I think we can get there. Mike is our procedure is going to be to put together a plan, or Mike will put together his initial plan. He will meet with me and some of the senior management folks in the office, and we'll talk about any issues that we see from a legal point of view or a process within the office point of view that need to be tweaked. Then he's going to present that to the take our suggestions, present to our steering committee, get their suggestions, and then produce a final plan from that. That will, again, if we have to do two drafts, we'll do two drafts. Hopefully, just sort of a draft and a final product. So that's. But our goal is that when we move into the new offices, because part of this is it's down to something is nuts and bolts is, you know, what team members should sit next to what team members in offices so that we are more efficient and function better. That's the level of detail he's going into. So I don't want to move into the new offices with what we have going on now and then say, okay, 3 weeks later, let's bring buildings and grounds back and have them move everybody else to a different spot in the building. So our goal was to move into that office with this plan in place.
Carol? Will you be presenting it to the legislature?
Yes. Yeah. Mike will develop a plan to show a PowerPoint and do a presentation for you guys as to what we're doing, how we're going to do it, and why it's different. So
this is held up. This sounds really good. I've worked with Mike, and I'm confident that this plan will be well done.
In any time, Hilda.
So there is just one other issue I had, unless anybody has questions about that process or what we're right now. All right, there is one other issue I just wanted to raise, and Brenda brought it up by a FOIL application that was made last week. We have had an agreement out there with TNR Towing to do our the towing just for the DA's office for forfeiture-based tows. It's a small number of tows every year. It might be 6 or 8 tows. It's under $2,000, but we have not updated that in, I think, 7 years. I think it's 5. Okay, a long time. Okay, 2012 was when we last updated. We had we got a huge bill on and decided to go out and get bids, and TNR gave us a bid. So we've been operating under that ever since. Gave us a quote. According to Andy, we don't have to go out to bid on this because of the total dollar value of the contract does not exceed $2,000. But we will be seeking written quotes from other vendors within the county to see if we can change that number or at least update it. So that's the only additional information from the office. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else to be brought up? Yeah, nothing. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.